Welcome to the Draw Doctors Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
G'day, welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft all year round. Subscribe so you never miss a show. We're taking a look at the new positions this episode, some big names who've gained or lost positional status, and their new relevance or irrelevance. We'll get some injury news and answer some listener questions later on as well. I am Doss, and here's a man who loves to ride a pushy with his mate. It's Stevie Fizz. Welcome.
Yeah, g'day Doss, and g'day listeners, and it's amazing how much can change in a week. And of course, we mourn the passing of the great Marie Fredriksson from Roxette. But we'll talk about that later when we do the top five Roxette songs as a mark of respect. But of course, sad news in that I'll be leaving the Superior Rat in a few weeks. Comes as a shock, a surprise, and dare I say, a little bit of tragedy.
You're surely going to miss it, Stevie, and there was a hint in there, but more will be revealed soon. Jono Crockett, often the Grinch of all things. How are you enjoying the festive season there, Jono?
G'day, Doss. G'day, boys. G'day, listeners. I really like one part of the festive season, and that's because shops like Aldi and Coles and Safeway, they bring out my favourite biscuits this time of year, and that's the German Leverkusen chocolate-covered gingerbread biscuit. And try going through January through November trying to find these bad boys. You won't. Come December 1, bam, they're on the shelves, and I've been eating box after box after box after these things. So over Christmas, I'm heading up to the in-laws. The mother-in-law has already got me four boxes ready and waiting, so cannot wait.
Delicious. Cam McLaughlin is here as well. What's your favourite Christmas treat?
I'd certainly not Christmas pudding. How awful is Christmas cake? And while I'm here, mince pies can get in the bin. But Jono, are you getting ready? Is this just you getting ready for the rig off? You're just throwing back these cookies in preparation.
I told you. I told you, I'm going dad bod category.
Okay. Good one. Yeah.
Got to respect it. All right, well, based on secret intel and what we know so far, we're going through all the positions line by line, checking them out for our drafts in 2020. And Steve, you're going to discuss the defenders.
Yeah, and look, defenders are probably the least affected of the positions, I will say. We've lost, obviously, Lockie Whitfield was the top average. Did miss a handful of games, but he's shifted over to the forward line, so it's... You could argue it's much of a muchness, but I would argue he's more valuable as a defender than a forward. That's just me being a bit of a jerk. We've lost Andrew McGrath, so we never really had him because he wasn't really fantasy relevant, statesman. An interesting one we have lost is Cam Guthrie. Obviously, he played a hell of a lot of midfield for the Cats this year, so there's one there, and there's a few other ones, but some of the adds, Caleb Daniel shifts from a forward to a defender, Nathan Jones adds defence, SPS from Carlton adds defence, Levi Casbolt, defender forward, Paul Ahern did manage to snip into a bit of defence, good for my keeper team there, Jordan Dawson, my boy Dossie, my boy,
No.
Defender forward. And Liam Stocker and Shane Edwards is one who got defender midfielder, formerly a forward midfielder for the super coaches out there. We know he's certainly relevant in that game. So when we look at the landscape, and that's what we're really talking about here, the landscape of positions, I think it's really interesting for AFL fantasy because I really like the top, say, 12 or 13 players. I think it's really hard not to rank Jake Lloyd number one. But you could make an argument for a whole host of players to be the second-ranked defender heading into the season. And I actually think it's possible, and we've spoken about this, that we don't see a 100-plus AFL fantasy defender for next season. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, what are we doing up in a couple of weeks, Steve? We're doing our hot take show, and watch out for that one on Jake Lloyd, because I have certainly got a hot take on Jake Lloyd for next year, and it could come to fruition.
Yeah, no, you're spitting some fire there, and I really like it, but I really love that. I actually love the fact that there's that it's really hard. Like, it's going to come down to personal opinion, and you're sort of going to have to put your nads on the line in a lot of ways, or your other parts if that's you know your girl, and probably not what I meant to say, but we're doing this thing. Like I really like Brody Smith, and he's coming in with the 12th best AFL fantasy average. His last 8 games were just hot fire for the Crows. Like, he's playing on a wing, looks really good. You know, Bashihouli's obviously battling injury already. Jack Crisp, bit of an outlier. Rory Laird, we've seen him go ham in the past. Like, there's a whole host. And it's really pick-your-poison approach. Can Christian Salem maintain? And again, you look down and there's some real value guys who have been top options in the past. James Sicily, you know, I know a lot of people, including us, are hot on Dan Houston. So, I mean, I'm really excited about this this upcoming draft when we're looking at the defender position. Like, Michael Hurley, the average is really, really unders what he's been in the past couple of years. So, when we look at Supercoach, it's probably, you know, the top 20 sort of spread out wider when we're talking about averages coming into the season. But I'm really interested. There's a lot of what I would consider mediocre options in that defensive line, probably in the D15 to D35 range. So I think there's going to be a lot of misses. You're going to be dealing with a lot of average picks. But when it comes to that, I think it really speaks to what you spoke about with Doherty potentially being overdrafted, Doss, because there are some really mediocre options when you're looking in the D2 range. Someone might be tempted to go super early on a Doherty because of the history. And, you know, that's probably not going to be me or maybe any of the listeners listening, but I think it really speaks to where the position's at, that you're going to need to look for that upside rather than settling for someone like who really doesn't have any upside, like a Shane Savage sort of type guy.
Yeah. I think one player as well, I can't recall if you mentioned him or not, was the Hunter Clark retaining, defensive status. I think it's something that a few people will be looking out for, particularly maybe your keeper leagues. And also he's kind of in that category of that player that everyone was high on at the end of last year going into this season. Then we saw St Kilda pick up a lot of guys, and there's a few question marks around him. Him retaining defensive status wasn't a surprise for us because we were doing the centre bounces. We were like, dude, he's playing mostly as a defender. But he provides another cheeky option maybe as a bargain sort of player there. The other one that was sort of more surprising to me that retained defensive status was Dan Houston. And it was mainly because, as we said, we did chart the CBAs and he was just attending a heap in the last sort of area of the season. Obviously, it wasn't enough, but, you know, we saw him attend 67% down the last 5 games of centre bounces, which we've already heard some of his hype this preseason. We might talk about him in the hype of the week a bit later on, but interesting to still hold a few of those guys that maybe could be those, you know, the punt guys that you're sort of going and hoping for the breakout as well.
Yeah, and that's probably where I speak of there's going to be value there, but it's going to be a little bit of a dodging the minefield and really making sense of why you think this player is going to break out. Like, I think people are sick of drafting the Callum Mills types, you know, that we expect but don't break out. The Andrew, like, and I know it's probably unfair because they're only a couple of years into their careers, but Andrew McGrath, you know, these sort of guys, like, I can see Doherty going earlier than we probably would have him ranked just because it doesn't seem like there's better options. And Hunter Clark's another great one as well because, yes, the guy looks $1 million. Yes, he has all the tools and traits. But look at what St Kilda did. Like, does it stack up in your mind that he should break out when they've added so much B-grade talent around him? It's really fascinating to me. Really fascinating. I think if you miss out on, say, either Laird or, you know, one of these guys who, like, let's say Jake Lloyd falls 10 points, he could still be the top defender. Like, I think it's really interesting if you miss out on one of these guys and you're relying on a riskier pick, say a Salem as your D1, what's your D2 look like from there? Like, it's just, you're really going to have to nail that position. I really think there's a chance that a lot of, especially Dream Team format leagues, are lost in the defensive line.
That's interesting, because I know you and Jono are pretty keen usually on drafting defenders early as well. And I mean, maybe that doesn't change with your first pick, but is this sort of a different mindset you'll be going into 2020, maybe for the first time in a few years regarding defenders?
No, it's not. It won't be at all. I'll still be rating him highly, but I'm not going to be afraid to rank a guy like Brody Smith, who will come in with the 12th best defender average. I'll probably rank him second in AFL fantasy formats.
Wow.
So I won't be afraid to make those leaps. Probably won't have him ranked there in Supercoach, not a Supercoach player. But those are the sort of moves you're probably going to be looking to make.
Okay. I wonder if anything's different in the forward line. Jono, you're going to take us through forwards.
Can we get Jono's take? I'd be really interested to see, because he's much like me. He's a defender's kind of guy.
Yeah, well, I've actually been thinking about that a lot, and I'm thinking, well, there's going to be... I can get defenders pretty much any time I like. I don't think there's going to be as a rush on them this year. And we kind of saw it in 2019 as well. Like, people held off on drafting their defenders late, and you're still able to get some banger defenders in your team. So I think it will have an effect on the drafting, and that's why I'm kind of looking at the forward line this year, looking at it as being a bit scarce. I mean, we've lost a lot. Like,
do you look at the way that teams are playing so much pressure across the forward line that maybe they're not turning the ball over? They're turning the ball over further up the ground. Maybe the midfielders are the ones turning it over.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, only a few teams, like, can, as defences, can trap it in. Like, you don't want to trap it in your defence, but there's only a few teams can do that. But it mainly is the forward pressure, and that's the one that I'm looking at this year. I'm looking at forwards this year, to be honest, because they are so scarce, and we lost a lot. As I said, we lost Danger, Dunkley, Boke, Marshall. They were the top four averaging Supercoach players for 2019. They're now all midfielders and ruckmen. We've lost Tim Kelly, Scott Lysette, Jimmy Warps, Caleb Daniel, Mitch Robinson, Ed Curnow, Billings, Mundy, Rory Lobb, and Shane Edwards in the forward line. Like, that is massive. And most of them were in the top 20 for averaging in 2019. But you said we gained a few. We did gain Lachie Whitfield. He averaged 111 Supercoach, 113 AFL Fantasy. I don't know what your take is, but I think that comes in a little bit with the return of Coniglio and Ward to the team this year. He's still average 100, but I don't think we're going to see those absolute bangers that we saw in 2019. We do get Dusty Martin as that forward as well. I think they're your 1 and 2 forwards. Michael Walters has retained Lunchmeat after only playing a handful of games. Devin Smith, he retains his forward status. And Steve, you were actually pretty keen on Darcy Parrish. And when you said that, I was like, yeah, he's a bit naff, whatever. But when I compared his numbers with Devin Smith's for that 2018 season, they were actually pretty much on par in terms of numbers. It was just that Darcy Parrish was a bit more handball happy. And when Devin Smith was out last year, he's actually come a bit more kick happy than handball. So the only thing that was the difference was the 8 tackles a game. So Darcy Parrish is high on my rankings this year. He's just outside my top 20, so he's also a guy who's retained his forward. We've got Gary Ablett. The farewell tour is on. How many jumpers he's going to swap with opponents at the end of games, who knows. His teammate, Jack Stephen. Can he go back to his 90s, and what's his role in that team going to be? Is he going to be the new Tim Kelly? I've got a lot of questions on Geelong at the moment. In just terms of setup, are we going to see Menegola, Guthrie, Dalhouse? Who is taking that Tim Kelly midfield spot? Darcy McPherson, he's got the forward status as well. He's actually quite an interesting one up there on the Gold Coast. He averaged 87 AFL Fantasy, 81 Supercoach. But we've got all these guys coming into that team, like a Hugh Greenwood as well. He's got the forward status, which I'm pretty keen on. We think he'll be the inside mid. Brad Ebert, another interesting one. He sort of swapped out with Travis Boak last year to play forward and was a little bit injury affected. Scored the 76 average at 76 Supercoach and AFL Fantasy, but he's someone who's averaged around 90 most of his career. So if he gets that mid-time as a forward, he can push up in terms of averages, and I think he'll be buried a little bit, as well as being that unsexy name where people wouldn't want to draft him, but I've got a bit of interest in him. Dost, your boy, who's got no relevance to fantasy this year, is Bailey Smith, has got the forward status. And there's a guy from the Fremantle Dockers. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but is it Andrew Brayshaw? He's going to be on a lot of people's radars, not just in terms of draft, but also the salary cap format. So he's someone who could potentially get drafted way too early just because of the hype that's going on. And when you're looking at it, I've been doing my Supercoach forward rankings lately, and I've got Jeremy Cameron and Tom Lynch inside the top 10, like, for in terms of how they're going to finish this year. Like, it's just so open in the forward line for the first two rounds. And then when I look at the next few rounds, it falls away like pretty badly. Like, you're looking at guys from Robbie Gray, bit meh, Paddy Ryder, what's he going to do? Petraka, Rosie, Westhoff, Martin, all these sort of guys, your third-tier forwards, and it's a bit meh. And that's why I'd be looking to grab as many of those top fours for me in my first maybe four or five rounds and lock them away. And then I know I can play with my defenders a little bit later on. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. Like, I kind of see a fair bit of value in there from maybe, like, from my rankings, maybe down to pick, like, the 30th forward. Like, I think if you miss the first couple, you know, you may not get so burnt because it'll average out anywhere within that sort of top 30 forwards. But after that, it is straight to the toilet.
Yeah.
Probably completely disagree. Not to dismiss what you're saying about the top guys like Whitfield and Dusty and all that, but only one person can draft them. Like, let's say I'm pick four and Whitfield goes to pick three, which is fine. Well, I don't get the opportunity to draft him. And then if I've drafted pick four, let's say it's Dangerfield, which is completely reasonable in Supercoach, right? Or McRae or Kelly in Dream Team or whatever. I probably won't get the opportunity to draft Dustin Martin. And I'm not confident on a lot of these other guys in the forward line like you are. Like, I'm not confident on Toby Green. No way. I'm not confident on Devin Smith. I'm not confident on Michael. I actually think it's a great position to punt, because historically we've seen all the breakouts come from the forward line. We've seen over the season that it's really easy to predict matchups for the forward. There's more forwards every year, and if the data we've been given is correct, there's more players listed as a forward than any other position. And I'm really confident about guys like Jack Gunston and Brayshaw and these guys, and that they might not end up as F1s, and I'd certainly like to draft an F1 and hope for these guys to fall to me. But I'm really confident in my ability to select forwards, whereas with defenders, I'm probably less confident because they can play defensively and attract. Like, look at Jack Crisp. He's a great example. Last year, sorry, not the 2019 season, the 2018 season, he was playing tight on his opponent more. This season, freed up completely. And the numbers switch. And I think that's kind of what happens with defenders. So I'd probably be more okay missing on a forward. I'm really cagey about some of the top forwards. I really think they're a trap.
Yeah, I'm already very keen on the punt forward strategy, like, after you've missed those sort of names, and particularly if you're not comfortable drafting. Like you said, if Whitfield's gone, it's not like you're going to reach for Dusty or especially Toby Green. I agree, he's in for a bit of a regression playing out of the midfield. You're not going to reach for them in your first round, so you've got to get that, you know, that high average player there. So apart from Whitfield, really, I mean, I think I'm going to punt aside from Whitfield for me. I don't see myself drafting forwards early this year.
If you were drafting at four and Dustin Martin made it back to you in the second round, I'm perfectly fine drafting him there. That's seems good value. But I'm definitely just, you know, I'm not. I think it's really interesting what you said, Jono. Because I think people
outside of Whitfield,
because it seems like they've dropped off, but.
See, outside of Whitfield, he's probably the only top 10 bloke you would take in the top first round, basically. The rest I'm happy to take. Like, Dusty's and Walters would be on the turn if I'm there. And then...
would you take Walters on the 1-2 turn?
Depending on who I've gotten...
who have you gotten? That's your 1-2 turn.
Well, I'm trying to think. Who would be there? Pick, say, 10. Caniglio. I might get a Caniglio. I'd take Caniglio Walters. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Fuck
now,
off.
Jono.
I cannot, Caniglio. Get behind that. You're full of shit. You're saying... you're just... fuck you, politician boy. There's no way... when it comes to draft day, Walters will be sitting there in round two and you'll go, yeah, fuck that.
Well, if there's another midfielder there, Clayton Oliver, I'll take him too.
Now, we have to pull you up on the pronunciation, Jono. We have been called out for it. It is Caniglio. We'll just get you to say that now, Jono.
Caniglio.
Perfect.
Nailed it. All right. Well, excuse me. Maybe we'll move on to the midfielders with Cam.
Yeah, so I've kind of broken these up into five different categories. The one that is still super relevant. The second one is still relevant, but it's probably going to slide a little bit. The third one's really cagey. And the fourth being late draft potential bangers. And then hard to see as relevant as only a mid. So in that top tier, still super relevant, I think Dunkley, Dangerfield, Kelly and James Warple are all going to be very serviceable next year. You'll look for those guys to be, you know, averaging around that 100 or 100 plus and realistically going in your first probably four rounds of draft, if not earlier. They're still super relevant, but will probably slide. Looking at Travis Boak, Ed Curno, who I think is actually really interesting and under... Teague actually scored really, really well. I think he averaged something like 105 AFL fantasy and 111 Supercoach over the last 9 games. Dan Houston, again, I think going to be pretty big, but you can kind of, I think, expect him to be in the 90s. And as, you know, if he ended up losing defender the following year, you know, you'd still be happy with that. Jack Billings as only a midfielder. Big question marks, but he's probably still going to end up relevant as a 90 averaging mid. Then the really cagey guys.
That's going to burn you.
If you draft him as a 90 mid.
If you draft him as a 100. That's what he...
yeah,
he's pretty close to the season.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. Like, I think he'll only go about 90-ish. I think it's okay for him to go that. But you'd
That's okay, but that means you're going to... That's about 6 rounds of draft value.
Yeah. Oh, it means I probably miss him, because I just don't value him as high as he currently... his average was. Really cagey and on the next group, and they're people that can all go sort of low 80s or even worse, I think, and so as a midfielder, they're probably not relevant at all. But ones to consider, Mitch Robinson, he had a career year in the 90s, and I think he'll actually regress next year as some of the young guys steal a little bit more of his time. And the addition of Cam Ellis-Yolman doesn't help that either. Ed Langdon.
But Robinson only played wing. He didn't play the inside mid. He was purely on a wing.
But I still think they're going to push... it's one more inside mid that they'll probably move to outside to accommodate him, unfortunately. And I think Mitch Robinson, I'm not 100% sure yet. I need to pop down to Yeronga and have a look at the training. But I really think that Mitch Robinson started his career in the sort of half forward line at Carlton. And I think he can, that's probably where he'll finish his career as well. Ed Langdon, new club. Wingmen actually haven't been consistently big scorers at Melbourne, whereas Frio, their game plan was quite conducive to big wing scores, where they had Brad Hill and Ed Langdon scoring, you know, that 90s-ish average over last year. So I kind of think that he's maybe in for a bit of regression as well. David Mundy, pretty disappointing throughout the year, probably not relevant. Sam Menegola, I know a lot of people are, you know, keen because he's had a couple of good years, but when he actually played last year, he was pretty much a liability and averaged in the high 70s in both formats for the year, so I'm maybe a little bit less confident on him, and I'm not sure how he fits into the Cats lineup next year. Zach Jones. I think there's a little bit of interest about, you know, what's his role going to be at the new club, but he did have a career year last year and it was only 82 and 85. So as a mid, that is, I think, pretty hard to draft. Then the next group is late draft potential bangers. So these are the people that you take a flyer on right at the end of your draft and maybe they're relevant. Will Setterfield, a lot of talk about him early in the Carlton preseason, about him coming back and looking like an absolute tank in support of Patrick Cripps in the mid. Could be worth a bit of a shout. Jordan Clark, probably a year too early, but has the right role and he might bump his average, but as a mid, it's probably a year off. Ollie Florent, we've talked about him a little bit on the pod. Definitely is going to have a more involved role next year. But again, it might just be that 1 year too early to break into that relevancy status for a midfielder. And Jack Bowes is probably the other one that is maybe a little bit relevant, but you'd only take him as, again, these are your lottery picks at the end of the draft. And then the ones that we just know that probably aren't going to be relevant at all, Xavier Dersma, Harry Perryman, Andrew McGrath, Matt DeBoer, Quinton Narkle, and Cameron Guthrie.
I think, didn't I cop a bit of slack for saying Xavier Dersma might not be relevant in 2020? But I thought...
Yeah, I think it was... I definitely poo-pooed it, but it was more from a perspective of... I thought he was going to at least have dual position, and he just doesn't. And I think that really, really hurts his draftability.
Perryman's a tough one as well. I mean, he definitely played enough on that wing throughout the year to get it. I thought we were going to be able to get him as a defender. He's one that surprised me, but
yeah,
certainly a few names there that become a lot less enticing. Trav Boak, the average attached to him on both AFL Fantasy and Supercoach, as we've mentioned on previous podcasts on our Burn Man and potentially even our Regression Pod, we think that's going to be a trap. Obviously, Steve's mentioned Jack Billings with the names around him and losing forward status. I mean, he might be one that eventually gains it back. Tim Kelly as well. Clearly, that was always going to be lost. But yeah, we've just lost a lot of our forwards. It was always going to happen. We knew it was going to happen. But here are the positions in front of us. And it's already sort of swayed how we're feeling about forwards in particular this year. Steve, what do you think of these new midfield additions and obviously the lack of positions in other areas now?
Yeah, look, I think it's really interesting. And I think it's one of the great, great things about AFL fantasy as opposed to other sports, especially the US-based sports, is that positions change. You know, in American, in baseball, if you're a pitcher, you're not drafted as a first baseman sort of thing and so forth. So I really like it. I think it's interesting. It means the landscape shifts from year to year. I probably won't shift my approach too much. The thing about, say, your Lachie Whitfield, only one person can draft him. So I would, again, probably strategize to head in with a midfield heavy. We've traditionally seen that your first 10 rounds are a 1-to-1 ratio, one midfielder per position player. And then, you know, you sort of go heavy on the positions after that. I'll probably head in with a similar strategy. Obviously, I don't know where I'll be drafting, don't know who's going to be available, don't know who's going to fall. Maybe the chips just fall that I draft forwards or defenders or whatever. But I certainly feel more confident in my ability to draft value later from my forwards than I do my defenders. I think there's a lot of meh about the defenders. Does the 666 play into that? I think it does. And I think we play Supercoach in our home league, Jono and myself, and I really think the Supercoach is I really think it's the best format for draft.
Here we go.
Well, think about it like this, though, and this is why. Like, if you draft Rory Laird, pick 2, second round, pick 3 in the second round, great pick. If he gets injured in Dream Team, you're fucked. Like, it really does cost you. In Supercoach, you can find 100 plus scorer off the waiver wire every single week. Can do it. You just can do it. So that's why I like it. The matchups matter so much more. I'm not saying they're not relevant in Dream Team, but I think it's such a important factor in not having a lost season.
Shout out to listener Ben Latham, who probably switched off at that last part.
You know what? I cop so much shit for going on about Supercoach, and I talk about Dream Team more than Jono. And yet Jono's the GOAT. Fuck you all.
I think I'm like 90% Supercoach and 10% fantasy.
I try to keep it a 50-50 split. You can all get fucked.
All right, I'll get on to...
This is just the Harvest Lane talking. I love you, listeners. You're my favorites. I hate you, DOS.
Yeah. I'll move on to the rucks and some people that have either... Let's go through the pure rucks first. And Rowan Marshall, the first name that I'll talk about here. And
the pride of Portland.
Portland's
greatest export.
Rowan Marshall, he's going to be a pure ruck next year, which scares a few people given the arrival of Paddy Ryder. I'll quickly go through these and maybe we'll talk about a few players in detail. Scott Lysette, pure ruck from ruck forward, and Callum Sinclair, pure ruck from ruck forward as well. And some people gaining ruck forward status here. Peter Laddams, I think he's pretty handy for your keeper league, could be the guy that goes big if Lysette goes down, but he's one of the guys that maybe you can bench stash if you've got extended benches. Another one for your extended benches, but probably irrelevant in your standard drafts, is Darcy Cameron. He's going from the Swans to the Pies. He's a ruck forward as well. You know, your Grundy backup, possibly some forward minutes they've talked about. Braden Pruce, undraftable, but... it'd be a gross bench stash in deep, you know, if you've got a deep bench, but otherwise, absolutely undraftable. And they went and drafted a ruck, so that shows the confidence.
And he's already
had
a Pruce as we speak, so it
doesn't matter. Exactly. There's not a heap to talk about in rucks, but there is, you know, we've mentioned Rowan Marshall. He's a name that sort of... get you guys' takes now that we're a bit deeper in preseason, because we have talked about him in the past. I was sort of skeptical initially due to the addition of Paddy Ryder coming in. You know, I think their plan is more so we need someone to come here so that Rowan Marshall doesn't bash his body too much while he's still, you know, mid-20s. Give him a couple of years with that shelter and then he can become the pure, pure ruck like he was this year again. But just have a couple of years learning and having a little bit of a chop out. So I actually think it does affect him a little bit personally. I don't know if I'm as harsh as I was maybe earlier on about how much it will affect him. What do you guys think on Rowan Marshall and, you know, his pure ruck status next year as well?
Paddy Ryder is there to teach him ruck craft, big boy, and that is it. They're going to let him go and Ryder's just going to mentor him, play as the key forward in that Josh Bruce role where he helped him out. That's it.
Can I ask, where has Paddy Ryder been such a dominant ruckman that he's someone you bring in to mentor?
Like, didn't he become an All-Australian as a ruckman? Or was that a forward?
I don't think of Paddy... Well, maybe he did, and I'm sorry to the Essendon fans if he did. But I look back on his career and he got suspended by then. And I look back on his career and I don't go, hey, Paddy Ryder... Whew, knocking it down the throats every time.
Yeah, I kind of see the same as a forward for Paddy Ryder, right? Like, I'm yet to see where he's supposed to be so good, except for the fact that he's quite tall.
He's a pretty good forward.
He's just got
height.
He's a good player. Like, I'm not going to throw shade
at him. I mean, and 22 hitouts last year as well, he averaged, and 30 the year before. So I just think, you know, those points do matter. And if he does get some ruck time, it's got to affect... Marshall a little bit, because who did he have last year chopping out? It was Josh Bruce who got, I don't know how many hitouts he got, but it wouldn't have been many. He'd attend a couple of center bounces a game. So, you know, it's going to have a slight effect on him, but whether he can lift other parts of his game to adapt for that and for it not to matter as much, that only time will tell with that, of course. But maybe another player we'll talk about as well. Scott Lysette was one I was sort of hoping would get the forward status, probably just dreaming in that regard, but had a huge second half of the year for fantasy. I know he was one of the best super coach rucks regardless, but in AFL fantasy had a big second half of the year and, you know, still value in the ruck spot. But I was really hoping, because of the lack of forwards this year, I was kind of hoping I could have a sneaky Scotty Lysett with his 82 AFL fantasy average next to his name as a guy who could maybe push for 90 plus and, you know, almost not guaranteed 90 plus, but, you know, there's very few forwards we can be confident in behind those top guys. And I was hoping Lysett could be one of those. But Callum Sinclair is an interesting one who I actually think could be borderline irrelevant next year.
Like, is he borderline in the 22?
That's what I'm thinking. I don't think he... I think they've got Naismith back. And, of course, my boy, Michael Knoll, in the top of your drafts there. Michael Knoll, adjust your ranks. But I genuinely think...
He was the backup forward behind Buddy, and now they've got McCartan and Blakely. What's his role and where's he playing? Yeah, and you've got Lear in that as a chop-out too.
Yeah, but McCartan can go back. And they did play him there. Like, why did they chase Danaher? I think Callum Sinclair can play the forward ruck role.
But then you've also played in the past. Lear.
So?
I just think I see a spot for him.
Why did they chase a tall forward then?
Because Buddy's like 70 years old.
They've just lost like key defenders. They need key defenders. Why do you think they went out and recruited a key defender? I don't think their master plan is a Lear playing ruck.
That's why
Darcy Cameron left.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I would say on Dossie's boys, like this Paddy Ryder and who was the other guy? Laddams, right? And even Segler has forward as well, like ruck.
Sorry,
forward.
Segler. Yeah.
Like if the ruckman in front of them goes down, these guys are hugely valuable. That's what you got out of guys like Rory Lobb in the past and Cam Pedersen, the GOAT Cam Pedersen in the past, is when players have forward status and they get to play the ruck role, that's when they're super valuable. And like you might say, hey, it's a waste, but Paddy Ryder will still chip in playing forward and some ruck role. So if you're in a league where you have a bench forward or an emergency forward specifically, he might be a great player. I'm not saying as a handcuff or anything like that, but if you plonk him on your bench, you probably get 65, 75 each week as an emergency score. And then if, God forbid, anything happens to soon-to-be Portland's second-best export, Rowan Marshall, he might be the guy who steps up into the role and just, you know, plonks you out a 92 average as a forward, and then you're laughing because you got him in round X. That's what you want. That's why Rowan Marshall won leagues last year, because he was off the waivers. He was round 20 pick.
Yes, Segler's one I definitely should have mentioned. I'll say for Supercoach as well, Oscar McInerney could be that punt at the end of drafts, just because if Steph Martin falls off a cliff, he was big in Supercoach, and he's a guy that I think, you know, Steph Martin's... Honestly, there was games... At times last year, I was like, ooh, this is closing to the end, particularly when Tim English absolutely dominated him. And Tim English was not the man that he's going to be one day yet. So when he got dominated there, I was a bit worried. But the reason I mentioned Cal Sinclair, and I'll finish up on this as well, I reckon the most interesting part of trade radio came when the Sydney list manager came on and talked about what they're going to do for their rucks next year. And they were talking about it. And they were like, yeah, he's like, yeah, no. So Sam Naismith's coming back. We've got, I think he mentioned my boy, Michael Knoll. It's like, we got these guys. And then he had to be reminded by the hosts, oh, you've got Cal Sinclair too. He's like, oh yeah, that's right. I was like, gee, he is not in the plans for Sydney. So anyway, I think that's pretty much what we've got. Does anyone want to talk any more about positional changes that we've had?
I'm not fruit picking Mickey. I'm just all about that Riley O'Brien life. That's all I'm going to say about rucks this year.
Yeah. All right, I think we'll get on to some questions first, and then we'll go through our top five rock set songs due to Steve's. Chucked that on the run sheet.
It's a tribute. Have some fucking respect, Doss.
18 years she had this illness for. 18 years.
She's been
That's
in our lives
as long as you've been alive, Doss.
Been in our lives for over 30 years, Doss. That's half your age.
Okay, Boomer. I should have researched what was going on there before commenting. Sorry, Roxette. All right, so guys, check out the website. We've got the revamped website up there and plenty going on. Steve wrote an article with some additional burn men that weren't on the pod from a couple of weeks back. We have our weekly hashtag Hype of the Week article, a weekly diary looking at the players building the most hype in the preseason. Last week, we had Cam McCarthy. This week, we're leaning towards Dan Houston or Rosie with a bit of the hype going out there. Which way do we want to go there? I think we've sort of going with Houston with his midfield time. What do we reckon?
I'm pretty bored into the Houston thing.
Me too. That's hype of the week then. He's achieved it. All right, check out the Draft Doctors merch as well, hitting the merch tab on the website and support the brand. We'll now hit up our questions from social media. That's at the Draft Doctors on Twitter. You can search the Draft Doctors on Facebook and Instagram as well. These are the questions from Twitter this week. Okay, Fantasy Footy Flog says, couple potential DPPs I'm curious about. Devin Smith, how many games can we accept and will he get CBAs? We'll start with that one. He's got a three-parter here.
He should get CBAs because they need someone with some balls in that midfield. He'll get
I find it hard. Yeah, it'd be a minimal amount though.
Yeah.
If it's any, it's minimal. Not enough and to hang your hat on.
If I can get 15 games out of him, I'd be happy.
The other thing
I want 17.
I don't think Essendon drafted.
Yeah, I'm lowballing it.
Essendon had the opportunity to draft some inside mids as well, and they just didn't do it. So it's like they had people that could have played midfield next year, AFL-ready players for next year. They chose not
to. They got Tommy Cutts, so that's all they need.
That's all they needed.
Jacob Townsend as well actually could be of value. I think he's coming in as a forward.
Oh, man. Jacob Townsend is the new George Haaland-Smith. We've found him.
I'm actually keen on. I'll hang my hat on Darcy Parrish this year. The way they moved the midfield around last year said to me, they look at him, they like him, he could win a clearance. I know Statesman still likes Andrew McGrath, and look, it could happen. Oh, I know. I'm not. That's not me. But I'm just saying, Statesman knows more about footy than I do.
All right, and knowing me that I go straight from reading off the thing, he actually was trying to say expect, but he wrote accept, and I read it like that. So how many games can we expect from Wingard as well? He wants to know the same question. Will he get CBAs as well?
Hawthorne had a pretty good medical team. He'll play a lot.
Wingard's had a pretty good history. I know he's had his injuries the last year or two, but he's been pretty good generally.
Mm.
Yeah,
he'll play at least 20 games. At least 20. He might miss one or two with a soft tissue because he's had a bit of history of that, but he'll play a majority.
I think Wingard could be a bit of a... I think he could be a good value. He had a good points per minute at the end of the season when they put him in the midfield. They gave him low time on ground. I know Tom Mitchell coming back doesn't help, but Wingard's still a good player. If he doesn't... they said they didn't... He wasn't explosive, and that's why they couldn't put him in the forward line. Maybe if he gets that explosion back, or whatever the hell that means, he goes back inside the forward line. But otherwise, maybe he's on a half forward flank and roaming around. And he takes some CBAs, and he's a good pickup. You could do worse. You got to remember his first half was pus, though.
He'll come off no preseason, and his average will be buried too.
Like, and I'd expect Hawthorne. I expect Hawthorne to be better. No, his average isn't that. His average isn't that bad, to be honest.
It's not that bad, but it's buried because he had a shit half of the season.
Sure, yeah.
All right, this is the third part of his question. Thoughts on Carlton, Sam Petrevsky, Seaton? I'm not sure if we mentioned him, but he has defensive mid status.
Yeah,
he does. Big Carlton watch for me, especially with how the defenders line up, because with seven blokes who could be in that defensive role for Carlton. It's a watch and act for the JLT series.
I think it's really interesting, and you know, I was saying in the chat to these blokes through the week, like what actually happens with Nick Newman. They've got Cade Simpson, they're getting Doherty back, they've got SPS who's, you know, earmarked for that sort of halfback flanker role. Where does Newman fit? You know, like I think SPS will probably take that role because he's very good.
I reckon he's a midfielder. He came out as a midfielder. He comped really well, lays tackles. I just think he's an interchange player this year, and hopefully Murphy retires. Sorry, I shouldn't say Carlton fans, but Hopefully Murphy retires and that becomes
who's him. Not a fraud.
Not a fraud.
Ben Latham asks, we've just talked about him. Thoughts on Segler? He was solo ruck when McAvoy was sent into defence and scored 81, 102, 103. But Frost could push McAvoy back to the middle. What do we think there? That was weird with McAvoy late in the year. I don't know what's going on there. And he was one of the better rucks at times last year before sort of being injured. So what are you guys' thoughts on that? I think, Steve, you've had some takes on Segler this year, haven't you?
The forwards who get ruck time can be super valuable. Now, McAvoy has been reasonably durable over the journey. I find it hard to believe with the way that Hawthorn have recruited that McAvoy is playing in defence. Now, if you're in a position change league, McAvoy might be an interesting draft pick if he slips because of this news. Let's say he plays defence for the first 4 weeks, picks up defensive status in round 3 or 6, depending on which system you're playing on, and then they put him back in the ruck, and you've got a guy who's a defender playing ruck. That'd be pretty mint, wouldn't it?
Mm. He's not. Was he good in defence? Like, surely he wasn't. No. He's not the most nimble defender. He's not the most nimble bloke going around. Like, I wouldn't.
He can take a contested mark, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's all he does.
Yeah, if he could drop in drafts, and he could be a super value. Yeah. You look at Hawthorn. They really don't need a ruck forward. They get Patton, they've got Lewis, they've got, who's the other
Gunston.
Guy? O'Brien. Like, you know what I mean? They've got a lot of tolls.
Yeah. Okay, this one comes from Russ. Can you guys explain how Ultimate Footy picks DPPs versus AFL Fantasy? There always seems to be some difference between the two.
I thought this was interesting because we haven't seen it for a couple of years. They've been the same for a couple of years.
True. So then they tack on their own or something.
So I think at the start of the year they're the same, and then as they go through the year there might be one or two differences. So Rory Atkins, I think, was one last year that gained defence in Ultimate Fantasy or Ultimate Footy and not in AFL Fantasy. And I think it just comes down to whoever's doing the selection, what their disposition is to certain bits of data. That's it.
Data.
bit more eye test, bit more gut feel. But they used to actually start with a few different positions.
Right.
When they gave a fuck.
This final one comes from Doss. Paddy Dow's relevance as a forward mid. Guys, opinion.
Hey, well,
can we mute this bloke on Twitter? Get rid of him.
You're not going to believe it. I'm actually looking out at the Western Highway and there is a tumbleweed. I kid you not, a tumbleweed going down the Western Highway.
How many times have you used that joke now, Steve? All right, we'll get on to our top 5 rock set songs. Steve, you're the champion for this. Do you want to take us through it?
Well, I love rock set. And as we... It's really weird because I woke up and went onto the computer and slagged us off for a little bit and then checked Twitter and... and I saw the news that... we'd lost a great artist, and you see a rapper die every week, don't you? And you're like, yeah, who fucking cares? But this woman's been in our lives for 30 years, and I had to step back. I had to take a moment. I had to have a Harvest Lane dry red with my toast. Just pour one out. But look, I love Roxette. They had a number of bangers, and if you're one of the kids out there, you're a quarter of Dossie's age, maybe you haven't heard of Roxette, certainly get on the YouTube and Google a few of the songs or whatever the fuck it is the kids these days do. Number 5, I've got The Look. Number 4, I've got Fading Like a Flower. That is actually Baby Fizz's favourite song. She loves Fading Like a Flower. Number 3, I've got Almost Unreal, which people seem to not have on their top 5 list, which... I was shocked about because features heavily in the Super Mario Brothers movie film clip, and what a great song. Number 2, I've got Joyride, and number 1, I've got Dangerous. Love that song.
Jono?
Growing up in the 80s and 90s,
Sunday morning's video hits. That's what it was all about, watching Roxette rocking out. Fading Like a Flower, number 5. Must Have Been Love, 4. Dangerous, Joyride, and The Look, because they were the most played songs when I was a kid, and they stuck in my mind on Sunday morning's video hits.
Cam, have you got a top 5 for us as well?
No, I don't, Doss. No, I don't.
You're off the show.
No, I should like that. I like that, because paying respects by not giving us his shit takes.
All right, that'll do us. Subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tune in next week for Steve. What have we got?
Oh, Christ, really?
Every damn week. It's so
good. Why would you tease it? Why would you tease it, Doss? You know I don't know.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.